Welcome and happy Friday. This is Travelogue, the podcast of Condé Nast Traveler, and I am here in the Condé Nast podcast studios with Laura Redman and Bridget Hallinan of the Condé Nast Traveler editorial team. And by Skype, we have Mark Elwood, a voice that will be familiar to all and sundry, who is a contributing editor for us and who is at this very moment. Where are you, Mark, right now?
I'm in rural Scotland. I'm in Ayrshire in a hotel. So if you hear people clearing up around me, it's the end of my day. So I apologize. It's not me doing double duty in the kitchen. There's some very hardworking people around me.
And just because we have some Scotland fans in the room here, where exactly is that? Is that west? Is that east? Is that...
I am in the part of Scotland which is fascinating. It's the part of Scotland that abuts Northern Ireland, so it's where the culture really blends. So you'll see, essentially, it's 11 miles. There's a big rock in the sea between southwestern Scotland and Northern Ireland, and that's 11 miles from the coast of each country. So whenever you see a Scottish person whose last name begins with MC, not MAC, which is, of course, MC is the Irish way, those people are probably legacies whose families live in the southwest of Scotland and at some point migrated that very short distance from Northern Ireland. So it's a great reminder of how Scotland and Ireland, especially Northern Ireland, have really connected cultures. I'm sort of on the border of them.
That was the biggest learning moment I've had all day. I think we're done.
Yeah, like, that was fascinating.
That's it. Great. Good job.
You're welcome. My job here is done.
Yeah. Actually, we're not going to talk about Scotland at all today, I think, unless it randomly comes up again. We're going to talk about where you should be traveling this fall because the season is upon us. We've had actually some brisker days. I wouldn't call it cold yet or even cool, really, but we did have some very nice fall-ish weather. And the summer is for sure behind us. So first question I wanted to ask you guys is, you know, summer is the big travel season, particularly here in the United States where people get their vacations from work. Everybody's back in school now. So how do you think about and how do we recommend, how do we change our recommendations for travel in the fall?
So for me, I thought it was really important to consider all the complicating factors around fall travel. You've got school schedule, school's back in session. With that usually comes sports seasons for a lot of families. Kids are playing 2 to 3 soccer games and flag football games a weekend, so they often don't leave. And if you do leave, you're yanking them away from all the new routine that they've just started up. So the way I thought about it was, I thought it was important to consider low-key, domestic, you know, across North America, getaways that you could do in a long weekend. So it doesn't feel like a heavy lift. You're not trying to plan a massive 2-week vacation. You can save that for next summer or over the Christmas holidays. But these are like little nuggets that feel doable.
Mark, where do you come from on this?
I think Laura's making a great point. I think of fall vacations as the treat you give to yourself, almost like the vacation, the kind of little vacation that you sort of think you shouldn't take, but you deserve. Everyone plans the summer a long way ahead, but what the fall is great for is taking one weekend and saying, I've always wanted to go to X place, and having a short family getaway, because you know what? It really sucks. That long stretch between fall and the holidays is exhausting, and it's when you really need a treat, but we don't tend to give it to ourselves. And I think Laura's point, there are lots of reasons we don't do it, but take one weekend and say, we're going to plan ahead and think, we deserve a family getaway that's not too expensive, not too far, but it's going to give us just a shot in the arm. I think Laura's 100% right.
I actually find it super liberating because those big summer trips tend to be very stressful to produce and plan.
Totally.
And a long weekend is really easy to handle, and it takes all this pressure off, all the pressure of having a big event, and you can be just free to have a good time, do something, as you said, Mark, that you've always wanted to do. So with that in mind, what kinds of places are we recommending people go to this fall?
We started looking at a few of the classic regions. I mean, you can't go wrong in New England. We have half a dozen pieces on our website about road trips to take and the best things to do in the fall in New England. That extends up into Canada, too, just north of the border of Maine.
Yep.
It's just like it's the perfect season there, right? September, October, the weather is gorgeous and crisp, and it practically smells like produce. You know, it's just like apples and pumpkins everywhere. And
you start smelling, this is a key signaler to me, you start smelling wood smoke from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when it really starts to say it's coming.
It's absolutely so soothing.
Yeah.
So we have a few picks from the Northeast, but then it's shoulder season in a number of places too. And you don't think about it, but you can do a weekend beach getaway still. It's not like blasphemous to go to the beach when it's not the summer. And we Mexico's Mid-Pacific coast has a lot going on right now, so we have a recommendation.
Hang on, Laura. Before you get people on the beach, I have to do a big vote for the Maritimes in Canada.
Okay.
Because I think that is the part. It's sort of this sort of greater New England. And Brad, you're like, I know you won't consider Canada New England. You're a New Englander. But the Maritimes are that bit of leaf peeping that sort of gets overlooked. They're like the equivalent of in a sitcom, the last season, the character you forget got introduced. They're the ones that you can go up, and they're often a lot quieter. Prince Edward Island.
I was going to say, where are
amazing.
You? Where are you talking about exactly?
What are you talking about, Mark?
Exactly. I mean, if only I knew. I think on Prince Edward Island, you've got this Confederation Trail. It's this 300-mile trail that you can follow. It was back formed from the railway beds up there, and you basically get these incredible views. And remember, the numbers are lower because it's less high profile. You're not in that congested. You know, New England can get congested during leaf peeping, understandably, because it's so beautiful. The Maritimes are going to be a little easier. I'd go to Cape Breton Highlands National Park in Nova Scotia. It is the perfect place to see the trees turning. Remember, they will turn a little earlier because it's a little further north. So if timing works, drive a little further north or fly a little further north if you're not coming from the Northeast, and you get this gorgeous New England-y experience with that Canadian je ne sais quoi.
How far are we talking about in terms of a flight from, say, Chicago or New York?
You're saying from Chicago or New York, you're talking 2 or 3 hours. Again, it's everything we're talking about today. It's the idea that you can do this for a weekend. If you're going to New Brunswick the first weekend of October, you're looking at a 3-hour-ish commute to this incredible destination. I just think this is when you check off on your bucket list of travel stuff. I've always wanted to go full leaf peeping. You know, you can do it in 3 days. And it, at least from the Midwest and the East Coast or the Northeast Coast, it's a 3-hour maximum journey.
You mentioned driving when you're up there. What is the road trip you should be taking, or what does that look like when you're there?
I think, again, I would reiterate that Confederation Trail, which is, you know, almost 300 miles, I would follow that. That's a great sort of guideline through Prince Edward Island. And that, you're not going to go wrong. Look, in any of these areas, you're not going to go wrong. Turn around and squint a little, and you're going to get beautiful fall foliage. You know, I'm not an outdoorsy person. Many of the regulars of the podcast will know I like plants where they belong, in pots, safely in urban environments. But the one thing I'm not allergic to is that beautiful color when it looks like they're slightly on fire, but in the safest way. And I honestly, you could get me in the countryside in the fall.
Sorry, Mark, I was looking at Seb's piece about the Cabot Trail when I asked you that question. I knew you'd already said it.
So
sorry about that.
Yep.
Do you know the Cabot Trail?
I don't.
Okay, I won't ask you about it then.
Well, both you can get to through Halifax. One of our writers, Sunshine Flint, talked about this trip that she had done with her 6-year-old twins. It was a really good family getaway because on Prince Edward Island, there's Anna Green Gables' house. There was an actual Green Gables that inspired the story. There's a lot of oyster tasting well into the fall. You can do like an oyster hour and kind of eat your weight worth.
They're kind of among the most famous oysters in the world, right?
Some of the most oysters and mussels, right, come from there?
Yeah. Hello. Prince Edward PEI. I mean, you could sit me in a corner with a whole load of oysters and something just to get them open in Prince Edward Island, and I'd go for the weekend for just that.
Yeah, I would too. All about the food.
Are you an oyster fan?
Oh, yeah. I have a great story coming up, though, when I end up touching on Scandialis about how an oyster event gone wrong.
Oh no.
Caused hot sauce all over my face.
Oh no.
Well, I feel like you go to that word you just said that I can't pronounce.
Yeah. Say that five times fast. Yes.
Skaniateles.
You've talked about this place a couple times. You're a big fan. It's in the Finger Lakes in yes. upstate New York. Mm-hmm. So not so far from what we're talking about, but you're a foodie too. Like, do you go yeah. here for the food opportunities?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, so Skaniateles is a lakeside town in central New York. There's great seafood restaurants there. Big oysters. Don't try to swallow them whole because you will get hot sauce coming out of your nose, which happened to me.
Really?
In the middle of the restaurant.
They're that big.
It was a big oyster. yeah, you know, charming. But they also have this really great Italian restaurant. We ended up going there for my graduation because it was half an hour away from my school, called Rosalie's. Joe Biden's been there. A lot of famous people sign the wall. It Ooh. Is absolutely excellent. Get the braciole.
Okay.
yeah, there's like fish fry places. There's a really good homemade ice cream place, like a local inn that I want to say has been around since the 1800s, and they still have pretty good, like, you know, like classic New England food.
Is that the Mirbeau?
That is not the Mirbeau. The Mirbeau has more of like a French influence, which is where I stayed the last time that I went. It's just like, it's absolutely stunning. Like, if you're going for like that indulgent long weekend that you mentioned, Mark, like that is absolutely mm-hmm. the place to go. It's nice because, I mean, you can stay there with your family, but if you want to go to the spa part, then that is 18 plus. So you can kind of like leave the kids for an afternoon, get a really great hot stone massage, unwind in the eucalyptus steam room, just relax with like your feet in a flowing river of warm water. It's just the most relaxing thing you can
I
think
want
about.
That right now. I'm going to leave this podcast and exactly. go get a massage.
Start driving.
Laura, you read my mind. I was like, Bridget, you sold that so hard.
Yeah, you did.
I thought, should
good.
We just all go now?
It's honestly one of my favorite places that I've ever stayed. And it's just gorgeous too. Like, it was modeled after Giverny. So it's just a bunch of like butter yellow buildings. There's ivy climbing everywhere. There's a Monet bridge. It's like this turquoise bridge that goes over a koi pond.
Oh, really?
Yep. The on-site restaurant is great. You can get like œuf de faisan in the morning, which is really good.
What is that for those who don't
yeah, I was gonna
speak
say,
French? What is œuf de faisan?
I'm going to pretend I know what that is.
Eggs two ways. I believe it was like avocado toast with a fried egg, and then I want to say something with a poached egg. Mm. Don't quote me on that, but it was really good.
And you can fly into Rochester if you're not, because I think upstate New York is one of those weird parts of America that if it weren't in the state that Manhattan is in, it wouldn't get eclipsed the way it does. It would be seen as this beautiful kind of countryside. If you're not driving up to it from the Northeast, you could fly into like Syracuse or Rochester to get to Skaniateles. It's very well connected, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely fly into Syracuse, and then it's like a 25-minute drive from there. Or there is, I believe, a small airport there, but that's probably more for private planes.
The other thing you can do there, I'm going to guess, is the other most famous fall thing in this part of the country, which is pick apples.
Oh, yeah. So if you're a fan of hard cider, the home of 1911 hard cider, Beacon Skiff Apple Orchards, is maybe 20-minute drive from the hotel, I think, and you can go there and pick a bunch of apples. Like, I think in October, that's a nice time to go. It's like 50, 60 degrees. Fuji will be in season, so will Golden Delicious, and you can pick apples, but you can also go to the on-site tasting room and get a flight and just sit back and enjoy. So it's really, it's everything you could want right there.
From the picking to the drinking.
From the picking to the drinking.
Excellent.
Fall goals.
That's a decent tagline. I love New York. Should
Stamp.
Use that.
Copyright. I heart New York. Well, from the picking to the drinking.
There's another trip you can kind of take. A lot of these trips are connected. So if you decide you want to make a weekend, you know, 5 days or a week, I think it's pretty easy to do so. From any entry point, whether it's New York, Albany, Buffalo, or out to Cleveland, you could pick up Amtrak's Lakeshore Limited train.
Which, I knew you were going to say that.
Well, it's right in that area that we're talking about, right? And Brad, you talked about this. You said you did this like 20 years ago.
I did.
Loved it.
And the route hasn't, as far as I know, it hasn't changed that much. So when I did it, this was many years ago, and I was coming all the way from California. You stop in Chicago, you change trains, you pick up the Lakeshore Limited. I was going to Boston. You can also go to New York. You're going to go through Cleveland from Chicago, so you can stop there as well. I went all the way, did the whole route. And it's really beautiful going along Lake Erie right there in the north of Pennsylvania. Then you cut across New York. And the places that you're going are sort of in the same zone that we're talking about. And if you go at this time of year, you're going to get all that same stuff. I would recommend the sleeping cars just because I do think that's, you know, again, to Mark's point about indulging, do that thing that you wouldn't normally do. Give yourself permission, splurge on it. And I think you're going to get a much sort of more pleasant, laid back experience if you do that. You'll get a seat on the dining car if there's a dining car.
Oh, no. Well, that's the other thing. Not anymore. They're updating menu options, but they're the sleeper cars are getting a reboot on that line, so that's great. And then they're creating, Amtrak is big about this new contemporary menu that is phasing out dining cars on some of the older school routes, and they are making the meals better, but they're almost a little more like really nice airplane meals.
Okay.
But you could get like short braised beef, I think, was one of the options. So
So you're not, they're not going to starve you, but you don't go sit at a table.
But Brad, what was your favorite? I mean, I think that kind of train trip is a total bucket list moment, kind of like chugging through the center of the country and really seeing it. What stayed with you the most from that trip? Like, what was the moment that summed it up?
Well, for me, the part where we passed through not the most western parts of the state. So I was coming from California, but passing through Utah and Wyoming, I'd driven through those parts of the country before, but I hadn't seen them in the way that you see them from the train, which is this perspective they have on several of the routes. They don't have it on the Lakeshore Limited, but they do have it on some other routes. They'll have these cars that are observation cars, and they have glass tops.
Dome cars, right?
They call them dome cars. And the dome cars are a great place to go and sit and just chill because you can, especially in a scenic environment. I wish they had them on the Lakeshore Limited. I think the trains are typically a little bit too small for them to put them on, but they had them on the Western route that went from California to Chicago. And I spent a ton of time there. And it's a place where you can look out and just see everything around you really easily without doing any work. That's the great thing about riding on a train is you do absolutely nothing. And if you ride on one of these longer routes, it's actually very easy to walk around, to hang out, and you don't feel any kind of cramping in your seat the way you do on an airplane. You're there for much longer, but it's a much more pleasant experience.
Do you get to know people? Is there, because I think the camaraderie of train travel is part of the sort of unsung joy of it.
Yeah.
That you sort of, because you're there for longer and it's not a pressurized kind of awkward environment the way the plane can, do you all kind of get to know each other at least on nodding terms?
You do. And in fact, sometimes even more than that. So when I was on this particular route, I did
keep it clean. Keep it clean.
No. There would be these evening happy hours in the bar car, and you would get to know people because it took 2 or 3 days. The Lakeshore Limited doesn't take 2 or 3 days, but the other route does. And you do get to hang out with these people. You see them frequently. If you if you are on a train with a dining car, you're going to get seated. At least back then, you would get seated at the same table. And so you would get to know the people that you were sitting with because you were assigned based on the stateroom that you had. And so that was kind of a fun part. I will also say it's way better than riding on the bus, which I also did back in the day. Mm. And the folks that you meet on the bus, not necessarily folks you want to hang out with. On the train, it tended to be a little bit more relaxed and chill.
There is still some romanticism to it. And I know that Amtrak gets a bad rap for just commuter lines and kind of outdated infrastructure. And I don't know.
No, I think the commuter lines are deservedly complained about, but the nice thing about these is they're really not commuter lines.
Right.
When you take one of these longer trains, they make stops, but they don't make those frequent stops, and they tend not to be as crowded as the commuter lines are, especially during those busy periods. So I found it a much more laid-back experience than that.
Frankly, Brad, you make me want to do that train trip, and I'm the most impatient person ever, and I think you make train travel sound delicious.
The other place, and this is a confession now, that you get to know people on those trains back in the day, so this was a long time ago, but I think it's still true, I'm sure it's even more true now, is whenever there would be a stop, there would be the smokers who would get off and stand outside the train to smoke, and you got to know people because it was always the same people and because you were sort of located together because you were coming from wherever you were staying on the train. So that was another way to meet people. There were romances that happened, not to me, but there were romances. You could see them happen.
Slow travel is very in right now.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great thing to do.
We should do it. We should do an episode about slow travel, don't you think? I think Travelogue Goes Slow would be amazing.
Yeah.
Because I think we talk about how efficiently we want to see things, but sometimes the greatest indulgence, when we think about fall travel, we talk about indulgence, the greatest indulgence is saying, I don't need to see a lot. I just need to see something and decompress.
Yeah.
And train travel, you will see things, but also you're not feeling the pressure to sightsee. You're not checking things off. You're letting it wash over you.
Yeah.
And it's just delicious.
I definitely agree. I feel like whenever I'm planning a fall trip or my family is, like, the few things that we focus on will be, I mean, is the weather going to be nice? Are we going to hit, like, that 50s and 60s sweet spot? Like, is the scenery going to be nice? And then that's pretty much it. Like, we just go somewhere for a couple days, stay, mm-hmm. hole up, like, maybe go get some good dinners out.
I feel like,
relax.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think the other thing about fall travel that you remind me, Bridget, is that it's a different kind of sensuality than summer travel. So all travel is very sensual, right? It's all, there are all of these inputs that you get. In the summer, it's the heat, it's the blue, it's the, or if you go to a beach. In the fall, though, you have so many inputs. And the other thing that changes is what you eat, what you want to eat.
Yeah.
The food gets a little bit heavier. It gets a little bit richer. The flavors get a little bit deeper. You don't want to eat light anymore. You want to kind of really get into things that have lots and lots of umami. And I love that shift. And then all around you, we were talking earlier, you get all of these sensory inputs from the leaves, the visuals. I love the smells, the sense of fall, whether it's in the apple orchards where you're smelling it, or the wood smoke, or these other things that we've been talking about.
Well, yeah. Are there any other seasons when you plan scenic drives? I was just trying to think of one.
Not really.
I mean, maybe you like tiptoe through the blossoms in the spring a little in like tulip fields, but
you could do that in the south. I think you could do a sort of like drive in places where there are lots of trees and flowers in the south, but other than that, I can't really think of anything that's seasonal that way.
I think we should all just admit, are we all going to come out as fallaholics? I feel like we all should just admit we love fall and we love everything about it. We love sweater weather. We love the smell of bonfires.
Totally.
We love fall road trips. Because I think we should really be honest about this. We're quite partisan, right?
Oh, yeah.
This wasn't an accident.
Admit that.
Sure. We're junkies. Everything except pumpkin spice, which I don't believe gourds belong in your caffeine. Like, that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's not real pumpkin spice. Real pumpkin. Pumpkins are cool, but that's not pumpkin.
Disgusting. It's
I'll make
not
my chocolate pumpkin cheesecake for you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would totally agree. Fall is my favorite season, and one of the things. I'm gonna do the segue thing, guys. One of my favorite things is late summer, early fall beaches, and part of this is I come from Maine, and that starts in July. But my favorite times on the beach are actually in the evening. Or after dark when it's cold and you're having a party and we used to have bonfires in New England. That was a thing everywhere from Rhode Island up to New Hampshire, up to Maine. And people are wearing sweaters because it's cold, or they're wearing jackets, but you're still on the beach. And it's just a completely different way of experiencing the beach than in the summer. And it's a lot of fun. And I'm wondering, one of the experiences that I've had that was very much like that, again, a number of years ago, was in the Chesapeake Bay, where I did a fall sailing trip with some friends, and we did the blue crabs. We did a blue crab boil. Have you guys ever been there? What would you say about that?
I mean, I've been to Maryland, but I want to say it was in spring. I think I was down there for a volleyball tournament when I was still in high school. So maybe the weather-wise, it was probably similar. But it definitely wasn't like peak crab season or anything. And I was only there for a couple days. Well, absolutely lovely, though.
Karina Quinn, one of our colleagues, is from the area. And she was talking a big game about it. And I totally bought in. She said it's peak blue crab season. Mm-hmm. I don't even like crabs. And this sounded good. You can kind of make this place, St. Michael's, your home base. And there's the Inn at Perry Cabin, which was, I think, recently rebooted.
That's a famous joint.
Mark, have you been there?
I have been there, and I will say the thing that was always challenging about the Inn at Perry Cabin was, yes, it was lovely, but the capacity was quite tight. So the rates would go up. It is, you know, everyone wants to be there in fall. It's gorgeous. Not only has it been updated, but it's been expanded. So it's a little easier to get in. And honestly, that's one of those places that you go there for the weekend and you just don't leave it. You go down there and you play golf, you play tennis, and it is that perfect kind of resorty moment where you feel a tiny bit guilty you don't want to leave, and then you forget about it and you think, you know what? I just want room service and someone to massage my feet.
But that's also acceptable. It's lodge season right now, I feel like. We recommend, you know, it's the Mohonks and the Stowe Lodges and like you were, the place you were talking about, Bridget, up in the Finger Lakes. It's, you have every right to just beeline for a cozy place somewhere and not leave.
Yeah. The other reasons to go that Karina called out is that there's a good beer festival that's happening on October 12th and 13th. So you can plan for that right now.
Wait, is it called Good Beer Festival is it a good beer festival?
No, it's literally called the Good Beer Festival. I hope they can deliver on that, but she feels like they can.
That's kind of take her underselling. Don't you want to be like fantastic?
The
beer
awesome
festival.
Beer festival, yeah. Only for millennials. the amazing beer festival, and that's in Salisbury, which is about an hour from St. Michael's, where we were saying you can make your home base. So another great reason to go there. And then the Glenstone Mansion is reopening on October 4th. There's been a multi-year expansion there. They've added a new gallery, a bookstore, two cafes. It's a 200-acre site. It used to be a fox hunting estate. I don't know if you can still hunt foxes there. I'm guessing no.
Well,
and I'm going to defer to Mark as our resident Brit on fox hunting.
And I'm back in Britain where fox hunting, I never remember whether it's legal at the moment or not here. But let's say, even if you can hunt foxes, maybe it's better to just imagine yourself as an elite fox hunter and more succumb to the indulgence of it all. Let's leave the foxes to them, you know, to their business and, you know, indulge in the contemporary at a Glenstone Mansion. I think there's a few more distractions. As I say, I haven't seen any foxes in Scotland recently, so maybe we've hunted them to extinction. I don't know.
I saw a fox in Puglia this year, but that's another story.
Was it a very Italian fox? Was it quite chic?
It was extremely chic. It was extremely chic. It really liked sausage. I actually think this is really cool because at the Glenstone Mansion, as part of this reopening, they've got outdoor sculpture. They've got some Ellsworth Kelly. They have, of course, some Richard Serra, which is always cool. Mm-hmm. But he does turn up at these things frequently. And they've got some Jeff Koons. Jeff Koons and Richard Serra next to each other. I definitely would want to see that. That is pretty cool. So you can check that out. And that leads me, I hate to keep coming back to New York, but Storm King Center.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Those outdoor sculptures are massive, too. Yeah. They're oversized. They catch your eye from like a mile away. And you could go just hang out on the property for a while and feel like you got your art fix, basically. But it's kind of the Mid-Atlantic Storm King. Storm King is the northern Glenstone. I don't know.
And Storm King has a bunch of like nearby, like Warwick in New York, which is like a half an hour drive, like has a bunch of like apple orchards and like wineries. There's an amazing homemade ice cream place there called Belvale Creamery, which is my favorite place ever. Go there, get all the scoops, look at the amazing valley view below.
A good ice cream joint is a reason to go in and of itself.
I don't know if it would be open later in the fall, but if it is, it is worth it.
Yeah.
Now, can I take us away from the northeast?
Because
I talk about where I'm going to spend Thanksgiving? Because I'm so excited. I did the numbers and I looked at the weather and I am going to Austin for Thanksgiving.
All right.
And I think Texas in the fall. I wish Meredith were with us, who is our sort of resident Texan. She is the like one woman Texas tourism board. But I think Texas in the fall, you can wear really kind of cute Texan outfits in the perfect weather. And I am so excited, the idea that in November, I can have balmy 70 degrees on the lake in Austin. I can't quite believe it. When I checked the weather, it blew my mind. I've been there in other times of the year, but never in the fall.
Austin not hot is extremely appealing to me. Every time I've been there, it's been pretty damn warm.
Like melt your face warm.
Well, I don't know.
But you're also eating spicy barbecue.
True. I think the cuisine goes really well with this kind of, with a little bit cooler. Just 10, 15 degrees, shave it off.
It's all the brisket.
Prime time. Yeah. And Mark, it's funny you mentioned that because Meredith made the case for San Antonio, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 300th totally. Anniversary, which means that, I don't know, they'll have things going on in the city, but she just wants you to go down there and do a taco crawl, right? She called Benjamin's, Garcia's, Ray's Drive-In. She mentioned as a few of her favorites. I would go, like we said, you go for the ice cream, I go for the tacos.
Stay at the Hotel Emma.
I want to know, I'm sure we have listeners who have their taco recommendations in Texas or even in San Antonio. I want to know, is Meredith, tweet at us, let Meredith know, let the rest of us know, is her taco crawl the definitive one? Is Benjamin's, Garcia's, and Ray's Drive-In the taco crawl, or has she left something out? Because she will fight you on this. This is her backyard. So I'd love to hear what people think. Are those the definitive ones?
Oh, hey there, Mayor.
Right.
Send it to Oh Hey There Mayor. This is actually appealing too, because you can get something that I think is a little unexpected or a little bit more than expected. Certainly not if you're from Texas. This won't come as a surprise to Texans, but to us Northeasterners and to Californians perhaps, mm-hmm. they have a great Dia de los Muertos celebration on October 27th and 28th. And apparently it's really great for a north of the border celebration. So that, again, I think is something that would be really great to go and see. And you're going to get those Texas temperatures in the 70s, perhaps, instead of the 90s, which is a hell of a lot more tolerable.
So my friends, kind of independent of anything, said they wanted to do a big group outing to San Antonio in the coming year, and they wanted to stay in the Pearl District. So I feel like it's starting to pick up steam. The Pearl District is this trendy little neighborhood, not overly trendy, you don't feel gross, but it's not as touristed as other parts of the Riverwalk, so I feel like you can make that your base. Brad, you mentioned Hotel Emma, check in there, and it's another easy weekend. But Mark, I mean, Austin, I feel like, is always great, right? Where are you going to stay when you go?
I'm going to stay. South Congress is my jam. I love the fact that Austin, for a city which was developed during the car era, is walkable. If you base yourself in the right place, we're going to stay at the Austin Motel, which is this great kind of funkified old school motel that's very cheap. We paid like $140 for a double room.
Is that the Liz Lambert?
Yes, it's one of the bunkhouse group that's now part of the Standard. It's merged with kind of the Standard sexy hotels.
Yeah.
And for $140 to be in the middle of everything in a great double room with a terrific pool scene, again, you can walk to great restaurants, you can walk and get a coffee, but you've also got all of Austin around. You can take, I'm not going to rent a car, we're going to take, you know, rideshare services, local rideshare services to the lake. And it, to me, it's sort of like a burst of summer, but not in the overwhelming way. Like, I'm not going to worry about melting. I'm with you, Brad. Like, I'm a cold weather person. So I just want it to be nice and warm. And I just want to sit by the lake and read a book.
Yeah.
And maybe have a couple of margaritas, I will admit, with my book.
Yeah.
But that's, I think Texas is one of those fall destinations that if you've always wanted to do a little kind of exploration of Texas, have some Texas barbecue, you do it. This 3-day trip we're talking about, Texas is amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Another place that is nowhere near the Northeast is all the way over in Wyoming, Jackson Hole. Jackson Hole, famous, of course, for skiing. What makes it a great fall destination?
I'm not an outdoorsy person. I've said this over and over, but I have some great friends who run cocktail bars in New York but live in Jackson Hole. And everything they've told me means that I will go visit. I don't want to go in the peak of winter season. When I'm paying through the nose to ski, I don't ski. It's this rugged, cool, laid-back place that has lots of transplants who've given it an extra energy. And I think in the fall, it's a bit like, it's sort of Texas with even more cowboy. I'm not a climber. If you want to climb, you can climb. But I do think it has that same appeal. I love that you bridged to it from Texas, Brad, because I think it has the same kind of appeal. You don't necessarily want to be there in August, but boy, by October, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, you're going to get warm days. You're going to get cool nights. It's going to be really, really pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I'm the flip side. I love the outdoors. I used to be a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. And I think we heard from Alex Postman, our colleague who was there most recently, that you go here and you get outside. You're going hiking, you're going biking, you go to Bridger Teton, right? National Forest. Someone correct me out there on the internet. You can still go out on the river, on Snake River, and do a little whitewater. If you like to fly fish, locals say that the fly fishing is amazing right now. And I don't know, you just, I love mountain towns in off seasons.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like there's an off season, to be honest, because, you know, you go to Aspen in the summer, it's just as much fun as you going in the winter.
Yeah.
But you do get the added benefit of being mostly with locals, and there are more events, especially in the fall. We haven't really talked about this that much, but fall art season in most big cities is fantastic. It's one of the best seasons. So, you know, your local symphonies, theaters, art galleries are rolling out some of their biggest stuff. And I think the same would be said for everywhere from Aspen to Jackson Hole.
The other thing about Jackson that you can kind of do it in a variety of ways. There's a four-season resort out there in the Teton Villages. And then there's also little boutiques like the Hotel Jackson. So you can get a very different, you know, whatever type of thing you are looking for in a place to stay, you can find it there. And one thing Alex does not want us to let people forget is the Million Dollar Cowboy Bar.
Ooh.
Big stuffed animals and real, like, stuffed. I'm not talking about the ones you give to your kid.
Like on the wall.
Taxidermy.
And you're going to do some taxidermy. It sounds so technical. And, of course, the dance floor, the honky-tonk dance floor. So I'm not hitting it, but you hit it. We'd all be embarrassed if I hit
Brad.
It.
Brad,
you
sounds
would.
Sounds like a great time.
I know you would, like, three bourbons in.
Yeah,
you would
three,
be on that.
Three bourbons in. And almost anything can happen.
Who's been rude about your dancing in the past, Brad? I feel like you need to tell us about your dancing trauma, and we need to heal you of that on the dance floor in Jackson.
My harshest dance critic is my wife, who used to actually be briefly a professional dancer, so it is a high bar to clear, and I do not make it, but I do enjoy after several bourbons. I have been known to do it. So I'm curious if you guys are thinking at all about Kansas City.
I am. I can't say I love it. I love the idea of it. I haven't been yet, and I have friends who are from there. We have one of our staffers, Caitlin Morton, based there, who's been raving about it for a long time. And it's, I don't know, it has a huge LGBT community. It has great food. It's been kind of a fun, buzzy place for a while, but it recently got a few hotels that kind of puts it ever more on the traveler's map. There's a 21C Museum Hotel, which... it's called a museum hotel because it has rotating art exhibits. You may see oil paintings. You may see photography. It's really cool, pretty hip.
Do all the 21Cs have that?
Yeah.
That's a thing that
they
do.
That's a hallmark of them.
They're
right.
All have that museum aspect. Yeah, okay.
And, or at least an art element to it. Art is a very big part of it. And what I love about it is they're opening in a number of Midwestern cities. So Indianapolis has one. Lexington, I believe, has one. Mark, will you fact check me on that? Is it Louisville or Lexington?
It does. It's Louisville. But what I think is interesting, you're pointing out, I think if you want to know where's going to be cool in 5 years' time, look at where the 21C hotels open.
Totally.
They're sort of they're the advance guard. Where an Ace hotel opens is already cool.
Yep.
Where a 21C hotel opens is you're going to have to work a little harder to find some interesting things, but boy, when you find them, you're going to be so excited. And I think KC is completely embodied by that. You know, there's Open Spaces, which is a big public art fest. It's a 9-week art fest that started on August 25th in Kansas City. And to me, that's exactly what something like a 21C hotel ushers in, brand new. It's a partner with that art fair. And the art fair culminates in October at the Starlight Theatre when Janelle Monáe, let's remember Janelle Monáe, who's probably one of the coolest people in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
She's from Kansas City, and in October, she does the concert which caps Open Spaces as a kind of return to her hometown. And to me, if you had any better ambassador for Kansas City, Janelle Monáe. Everyone goes, how can you be that cool? You're like Prince,
right?
But now.
But that's
and
not all.
You're from Kansas City.
That's not all. This is like a crazy music time to go there, because the other thing that's happening is the Kansas City Symphony's new season, the 2018-2019 season, is going to kick off. It's kicking off right now, actually. And they've got, listen to who they've got coming there. This is kind of amazing. They've got Leslie Odom Jr., of Hamilton and many other things fame. That's coming up next week. And then they've got the entire orchestra is going to be backing Ben Folds. So Ben Folds, rocker guy, is going to be playing with the symphony, which is kind of an amazing thing to see. So Kansas City has one of the more interesting music lineups for this fall, of all places, if you can believe it.
I actually saw Ben Folds in front of a symphony at one point. It is a fantastic show if you have a chance to go, and it's only a few days after Leslie Odom, so you could plan a trip to Kansas City next weekend and into the following week and be hitting really good stuff.
You're right, that's right.
And am I the only person who thinks of Leslie Odom from NBC's late lamented Smash?
Yes.
Please tell me anyone listening.
You are not the only person.
Are you?
Yes. You watch every episode Smash? Of that show. That was one of those guilty pleasures that was like so kind of melodramatic and over the top, and yet I could not stop watching it because many years ago, and I know this is true for you too, mm-hmm. I was a theater person, a person who did the deranged thing.
Not many years ago, still.
Yeah, right. And so it had a riveting it riveted me. But also, the hipster memo has hit Kansas City. Mm-hmm. There is a hotel that is opening inside a former PBR brewery. So you're not just drinking the PBR and showing how how ironic you are.
Amazing.
You can stay inside. It's called the Crossroads Hotel. It's opening this October. And then there's also, and I don't know where this ranks on the hipster meter, but the Louisburg Cider Mill's 40th annual Cider Fest is going to be happening into early October. So, and there's plenty of music going on there and plenty of cider. So much going on in Kansas City at this time of year. Couldn't be a better time to go.
Do you know, I'm curious if anyone listening, if you're based in KC or you've been going for a long time, does it feel, I must admit, I've never been. It's one of those places that's definitely on my list. I've been lucky to go to a lot of places in America as a sort of incomer. But KC's really up there. And I'm curious if the energy we hear about and people tell us about, if locally people feel it. I'd love to please tweet me or tweet all of us. Tell us, does it feel like there's a real additional buzz around it? Because we hear so much about Kansas City from so many different directions that it feels like it's one of those places that is really on the cusp. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Great question.
I mean, Queer Eye's filming season 3 there, so if there was ever a buzz,
yeah,
it's getting louder now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go out of the country for just a second and maybe talk about Puerto Vallarta and Punta Mita.
Yeah, this was recommended by a couple colleagues who are saying that, you know, if you want a beach fix, you can still go to the Caribbean right now, but you are contending a little bit with hurricane season for at least another few weeks. If you don't...
We just did a great podcast on what to do about that and how to navigate that.
Please listen.
Yes, we did, Brad. Well done. Exactly. There's a very recent episode.
So you could head to like the mid-Pacific coast, and the temperatures are great. They're about 80 degrees right around, you know, late September, early October. And Punta Mita is this kind of place where it was known for having a ton of resorts. You have a Four Seasons, you have like big brand Titans, but there's a number of new places rolling out starting this fall. We're keeping an eye on it. We've heard lots of little things, and we're going to continue to update our article when we find out more, but you're going to have a lot of new options in Punta Mita and just a little farther north, I believe, soon. So you can do that. You can just like hunker down for a weekend, do the resort thing. Or you can go to a little surfing village called Sayulita. And it's kind of laid back the way Tulum was maybe like 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, you got me there. That's that's pretty attractive.
Right. You know, you can get like mahi-mahi tacos without a side of hipster. So
yeah.
I think that sounded pretty great. Mark, have you been around there recently?
Do you know, well, I was going to say, can I put a pitch in for a different place in Mexico that to me was one of the most special experiences I've had for a fall trip?
Totally.
Last Day of the Dead, I went to Oaxaca for a story. And I thought, and this shows my own ignorance, I, in that James Bond kind of spectre way, I thought, oh, Day of the Dead in Mexico City, not realizing that essentially...
Fake.
James...
Fake, yeah.
I know, exactly. Hashtag fake news, fake travel news. But when I went to Oaxaca, I was a little cynical. I was a little concerned that I'd be somewhere where Day of the Dead was being performed for my visitors' pleasure. And there's definitely an element of that. Of course there is, because there's lots of visitors. But it's clearly something that emotionally resonates with the local people and matters a great deal. And, you know, as I had my face painted on the street, I didn't feel like I was surfing on top of someone else's culture. I felt really part of it. And watching the parades walk around town and the music and the effigies and the marigolds. It was such an incredible realization that Day of the Dead is more than just Coco or some of the cute things that we've learned about it. There was something very visceral. So if I were sending people to Mexico in the fall, I'd say, you know, the Mexico beaches are gorgeous, sure, but you gotta go to Oaxaca. Well, just you can go to Oaxaca for Day of the Dead.
You can do, Oaxaca has an amazing Day of the Dead, and Guadalajara, we heard too. Megan Spurrell was talking about how you could go to some of the cemeteries and they set up all these tributes, family members set up tributes around the headstones of loved ones, but they also kind of almost have a little party in the cemetery. So it's kind of bumping.
I like the idea of combining Guadalajara and doing Day of the Dead and then heading out to the beach, because it's like 2 hours away. So the idea of going Guadalajara and then and doing Day of the Dead, which is something I very much want to do. I don't know where, but I really want to get down there for that. And I got to say, Mark, I love the idea of Oaxaca, because the art and the food in Oaxaca just by themselves. I have not been there. I've been to Chiapas. I've been to Chiapas two or three times, but I've never been down to Oaxaca. And that seems like the time to go, because even without the Day of the Dead kind of explosion, you get some amazing, amazing artwork down there, and the food is terrific these days too. But I do love this idea of making a multifaceted trip over on the Pacific side, going from Guadalajara out to Punta Mita and getting both of those things in the same trip. And it seems like a very easy thing to do. So this idea of Mexico at this time of year seems terrific to me. I know we said we'd keep it domestic, but, you know.
Well, you have a little Canada, a little Mexico.
And also, I was going to say, I think what we're talking about is achievable, easy trips. And the great thing about all the air connections is Canada and Mexico are both the airlift from most major settlements in America. You can get there as easily as you could to the east or west coast from most places. So yes, it's not domestic, but it is a 3 or 4 day trip that doesn't feel like it's going to break your bank.
Agreed. Great. Well, thanks, you guys. I think those are a lot of terrific ideas. Keeping it real, keeping it achievable is a great thing at this time of year. And definitely, folks, get out there, because it's the best time to be out as far as we're concerned. I think we've established that. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We are on iTunes. We are on SoundCloud. Visit us at cntraveler.com. We are also at Condé Nast Traveler on Facebook and YouTube, CN Traveler on Instagram and Twitter. Subscribe to the Women Who Travel podcast if you haven't already. Shame on you. I'm sure you all already have. And do tweet at us. We've just given you a lot of homework here. We need you to come back and answer some of these questions, because people here at Travelog want to know. Send us feedback. Review us on iTunes. Don't forget, as you do those things, another great reason to tweet, wish Lale a happy 45th birthday. She's always happy to get those wishes. Mark, how can people get in touch with you if they want to reach you directly about this stuff?
People getting in touch with me as they do on Twitter at Mark J. Elwood with a K and two L's. We love hearing your feedback. Ask us questions if you've missed anything. And please, I'm particularly interested in anyone from Kansas City. Tell us, as outsiders, are we right or wrong about that new energy there? Because I think it sounds so exciting.
You know what's funny, Mark? I've gotten a couple of tweets in the last week alone where people said, hey, I want you guys to do an episode about this particular thing or this particular destination. And we've been doing this for long enough now that sometimes we have. And I'm able to go back and find it and send it out to them. And I love the efficiency of that. Instead of going like, oh, okay, we'll put it in the hopper and we'll see when it comes up. I've got it right there. I can answer the question and it's great.
And yeah, and it is, we want people, please remember, we love all the new episodes, but remember there are 3 years of archives, I think, now.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, delve back and hopefully you'll find something interesting. I want to also thank Alex Harnad, who gave us the 5-star review on the What You Should Never Ever Do in a Hotel Room episode, who said, I laughed through my entire work commute. Those 5-star reviews really help us because it helps other people find us. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the 5-star reviews. More 5-star reviews. Nobody's going to argue with that. Laura, how can people get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram at Laura_Redman and Twitter at Dannon825.
And Bridget, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Instagram at BrHeltnan.
And I'm at Bradrick. Have a great weekend, everybody.